Hi there, I'm Nihal, and you're listening to the Rescue Tales podcast, the show dedicated to helping you settle your adopted rescue dog. In this episode, I chat with Helen Cohen about separation anxiety. Now, if your dog suffers with separation anxiety, you know how heart-wrenching it can be to see. So in this episode, we talk about the different types of separation anxiety, including isolation distress, and Helen explains how to spot the signs and what you can do to help support your dog to overcome separation anxieties and what you can do to help prevent them in the first place. Now, Helen is a professional dog trainer and a fully qualified and certified separation anxiety professional trainer. She's the founder of Fairy Tales Dog Training in the UK and is also an approved Kids Around Dogs trainer. As always, I hope you enjoy this episode. Hi, Helen, and thank you so much for joining me on the Rescue Tales podcast today.
No worries. Thank you for having me. Excited to be here.
Well, I'm super excited to be chatting with you because today we're talking about separation anxiety, which I know is a huge issue for so many dog carers and parents, including myself. So I'm really, really looking forward to getting into the nitty-gritty on this topic with you. But before we do that, tell us about you, your background, and what you do.
Okay. So I have been dog training now since end of 2017. It was a big career change for me at that time. And I did a 6-month training with the Victoria Stillwell Academy, which was excellent. So it gave me a really good basis of knowledge and qualifications in dog training, particularly around puppies. We did quite a lot around puppies, learned a lot around learning theory and all of that good stuff. And I started my business at the end of 2017 and was doing mainly puppy stuff, which I absolutely love. And I still love doing puppy training, puppy classes, puppy one-to-ones. I absolutely just love helping people with, you know, getting their new puppies and giving them a good start in life. But ever since I qualified with the academy, I've just, because I'm so passionate about learning more and more and just keep learning about dogs and their behavior and what's driving it and where's it coming from, that I've done various other bits and bobs. But I suppose what I specialize in now and what I focus on is still the puppy stuff, but I also am a professional separation anxiety trainer with the Julian A. Smith Academy. And also I'm an approved Kids Around Dogs trainer as well. So with Debbie Luckin and her brilliant group, which is a group of trainers that are able to help children feel happy around dogs and help that interaction go well. But yeah, obviously from the perspective of today, separation anxiety is an area that I'm fascinated by, and it's an area that I've decided to go into in quite a big way.
Amazing. Just on Kids Around Dogs, anyone who has children and thinking about getting a dog or have a dog and have any problems, definitely would recommend reaching out. I had Debbie on the podcast. She was the one who recommended me in touch with you.
Absolutely, it's brilliant. It's such a great organization because there's so many families that do find it difficult with puppies and dogs and young children, and it's so important to get them, you know, learning about how to interact safely with dogs.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, so separation anxiety, what is it? Because we hear the term a lot, and there's lots of you know people who sometimes think their dogs have separation anxiety, but maybe it's not. And we'll talk about what it might be. What is separation anxiety in dogs and how does it manifest?
So separation anxiety is where a dog is fearful of being on its own. So if I was to put it in a very simplistic form, that's how I would describe it. So it's a dog that is just really frightened of being alone. And when it's becomes severe, so dogs that have severe separation anxiety is when they start to panic, and they do go into sort of panic, almost survival mode. And, you know, some of the behaviours that you see with dogs that have separation anxiety are really quite, you know, they are signs of panic and real anxiousness and stress that's going on for that dog. There's a few types of separation anxiety. I guess the two main ones would be isolation distress, which is where the dog is frightened and scared of being on its own, but if anybody came back to keep it company, it would be fine. And then there's hyperattachment. And hyperattachment is where the dog has created a very, very strong bond with one or two particular people. Mm. And it's when those particular people are not around that the dog really struggles. And hyperattachment is a harder type of separation anxiety to treat for that reason, but it absolutely can be done. But yeah, I suppose they're the two main camps that separation anxiety falls into.
So if
What are the signs that then a dog has? Maybe let's talk about what was it called?
Isolation distress. Yeah.
Isolation distress. So what are some of the signs of isolation distress?
Well, the signs would be, in terms of how the dog behaves, the behaviors would be the same for all, but it's more about what happens when somebody comes back. So if the dog is becoming fearful of being on its own, but a friend, neighbor or a friend or the dog walker or the dog sitter comes in, then they are fine and they will be recovered quite quickly from that anxiety. Mm. Whereas obviously with hyper attachment, the dog will still be exhibiting those signs of anxiety unless the people that they really are attached to are back with them. In terms of behaviours that you will see with dogs that have either one of those issues will be things like excessive barking, whining, howling, trying to escape, frantic efforts to try and escape out of doorways, being destructive, chewing, defecating if they're otherwise toilet trained, panting, drooling. I mean, there's a very long list of behaviours that a dog may exhibit if they have separation anxiety, and not every dog will show the same. And that's why it's really, really important to understand every individual dog and what is going on for them when they are anxious. I guess what's important though is to understand that if it's separation anxiety, what we see is that we only see those behaviours when the dog is on its own, or those behaviours become much more intense when the dog is on its own. If some of those behaviours are exhibited while the owner is present or even in the house at the time, it may not necessarily be separation anxiety. But there's also a lot of low level stuff as well. And I think that's where a professional trainer will really help you, because we understand very, very subtle body language that would suggest that the dog is anxious, which an owner may not recognise, and therefore maybe thinking the dog is okay, but actually they're not, because they are exhibiting those low level signs of anxiety. And that's one of the things that I would do with a client in our first assessment, is really understanding what is that dog doing, from a very subtle lip lick to a yawn to the placement of his ears, things like that, that would suggest it's maybe not quite over its threshold, but it's getting close to that threshold of not being able to cope with being alone.
Okay. It'll be really helpful if you just very briefly explain what you mean when you say threshold. Just in case some of our listeners don't understand.
Yeah, totally get that. Yes. Yeah. We're very good at that, us dog trainers, aren't we? We talk about this terminology, expecting everyone to know. So a threshold is where the dog is coping. So it's that line, I suppose, where if they're at threshold or under their threshold, they're holding it together, they're coping, and they're okay. Under threshold is brilliant. Under threshold is where your dog's nice and happy and calm and relaxed. At threshold is where they're okay, they're holding it together, but they're starting to get a little bit worried. Over threshold is where they are really then exhibiting those signs of anxiety and stress. Yeah. They are not coping at that. And so when we do our training, we never ever want to see a dog at the point where we have pushed that dog over it. So I'll talk about, the training that we do and why it works in a second, but we never want to be working with a dog over threshold. We've gone too far if that's what's happening.
And is that because the dog, because I suppose this point also relates to, when dogs, even people, are most receptive to learning, is if you're pushed beyond your threshold as a human being and you are in an anxious state, you can't really learn anything in that state, because your cognitive awareness is really compromised. So I always think it's helpful to think of things like in, we do have more in common with our furry friends than I think.
I think a couple of examples I've always heard used would be, if you are drowning, the last thing you want is able to do is learn to swim. You just need somebody to give you the rope. There's no point when you're in that much of a panic that somebody tries to teach you something, because you're just not in a state where you're going to take it in. And then the other one that we always use is when trying to describe fear and how you help overcome fear, is if you're scared of spiders and someone threw you into a room full of spiders and told you to try and cope with it and learn ways to deal with it, the likelihood is you're going to go so over that threshold of panic and fear, you're just not going to be able to do it.
No, I can completely understand that. I actually suffer from quite severe separation anxiety. Especially when it comes to traveling. So if I spend time with you know, whether it's family, friends, even not really close family or friends, but I've spent quite a bit of time with them and then it's time to say goodbye.
Yeah.
It just triggers really bad anxiety. I've suffered with it for years. So in a way, my dog, and I was, you know, we talked about this earlier, my dog has developed separation anxiety. I adopted her about 4.5 months ago now. And in the initial stages, she was absolutely fine being left alone. I did it progressively, you know, first it was 10 minutes, 15, and I'm like, okay, she's fine being alone, leave her, you know, enough treats and toys and everything. She'd keep herself occupied or just sleep. And then when she started to settle in more and started to, you know, we started to bond and she realized like, oh, this is home. That's when we started to see the signs. And it was my trainer who actually pointed it out. He asked me, he noticed, he was around one day, we're doing a session and he noticed that she would just follow me around. And he's like, does she always do that? And I'm like, yeah. And I hadn't really paid any attention to it. My other half was always like, do you think it's, none of us are dogs, this is our first dog. And my husband's like, do you think it's normal that she's following you around? Like, it just doesn't feel right. And I honestly didn't give it much thought till my trainer pointed it out. And I thought, oh, this could be the early signs of separation anxiety. I did a trip and then I came back and she was with my husband when I was away. And then when I came back and I went out to the gym one day and I'd installed a video camera, and she started to cry when she was left alone. And then she didn't stop. And I got halfway to the gym, like, she's not calming down. Cause sometimes, you know, she used to do that. Like, she'd cry for a few minutes and then she'd stop and settle me. And it was more of like, oh, I want to go out too. It was almost like more of a FOMO cry than but this was just like, she was in distress and I just rushed back home.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then we just started working from scratch. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's a really good example of the difference between, is it FOMO, fear of missing out, or frustration, boredom, or is it separation anxiety? Yeah. And normally with the frustration, boredom, fear of missing out, they may exhibit the behavior for a little bit of time, realize it's not working and give up and fall asleep. If it's separation anxiety, it will intensify and intensify and intensify, and they won't stop because they can't, that they are in a state of fear and panic. And that's a real big decider of which one is it.
Yeah.
Actually, how you train it remains the same, but it would be, it's important, I think, to understand, because certainly when I do assessments with clients, we do really dig into what's the routine of the dog. Are they getting enough exercise? Are they getting enough enrichment? Because sometimes it will be the classic boredom, you know, that the dog is just looking for something to do while the owner is out. Because they haven't been fulfilled enough in the exercise and enrichment arena. So that's really important as well to just work through. But it sounds like what potentially was going on with your dog was hyper attachment, a bit of that starting to have that really strong bond with you. And then, you know, when you're not there, suddenly she struggles to cope. And, you know, with hyper attachment, one of the things we also say to our clients is try and spread the love. Basically, so try and widen your dog's circle of trusted people a little bit, not massively, but try and get other people in that can spend time with the dog, walk the dog, feed the dog, so that that reliance and that attachment is lessened a little bit on that one or two people that currently it has, if you're able to, of course.
Yeah, that's actually really great advice. It's what I did. Me and my husband, like, we actually sat down and like, okay, we need a strategy to help her overcome this. And one of the things we did was that he'd spend more time with her and I, you know, try and just pull back a little bit, which seems to be working. She loves him to bits, which is helpful. And he smothers her with love in a very different way than I do. So it's more balanced. But one thing I just want to touch on, because you talked about, you know, the importance of, you know, with your clients in the initial assessment, you look at, you know, what the routine is, how much exercise the dog's getting. One thing that I've noticed is I make sure that I exercise my dog Rosa well before I go out, especially if I'm going to be out for a couple of hours. The test for me as to whether she's okay or not with me going out and she's, you know, she's got any excess energy is if she sees I'm putting my shoes on, because that's a trigger. I'm by the door, putting my shoes on, and she stays in her bed or she stays where she is. She's looking at me. She's like, I know you're going out, but she just kind of sit. Then she's like, no, I'm good. You can go. I don't feel like going.
Okay.
I'm okay.
Yep.
And then sometimes as soon as she sees the trigger, me yep. going to the door, opening the shoe rack to get my shoes out. You can yep. hear the and her feet, you know, running towards yep. the door. Like, don't leave me. And I know she, and it's always so when I look at the video camera, I can see she starts crying. And I'm like, okay, go back upstairs again.
Yeah, but absolutely.
It's tricky because sometimes I wonder, well, if it's a FOMO cry and I go back upstairs because she's been crying for 5 minutes, is that reinforcing that every time she cries, I will just go back home? I struggle with that sometimes. Do you see what I mean?
I think, yeah, and I get that. And I think, you know, totally, I can totally see why people would think that. And potentially the answer to that is yes, you might be. Mm. But with the way that we see separation anxiety, it's the lesser of two evils, if that's the right phrase.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you want to let your dog cry out and cry out and cry out, and at the same time they're just continually having that fear mm. and that panic response to alone time? Or do you actually just want to go, do you know what? I'm not sure which one it is, but I'm going to go and help her and support her and tell her it's okay. Yeah. And our advice would be always to do, you know, the latter. Always go and never let them cry it out, because, you know, crying it out is just, you know, that dog is having a difficult time.
Mm.
And what we want to do is try and teach them slowly, gradually, under their threshold, that being alone is safe and it's okay. And so every time they have a horrible, frightening experience, you're teaching them the opposite of that, which is not going to help. So yeah, so we do always recommend that, you know, if your dog is starting to display any of those signs, then to go back and to see them and to give them some support. But you made a really interesting point about departure cues, and departure cues are a big thing. You know, the things that we do when we are going to leave the house are big triggers. Our dogs have made very strong associations with the fact that they see us doing those things, and then they can predict what is going to happen next, which potentially is that alone time. So they do get themselves worked up quite quickly. And again, in the assessment that we would do, we would talk about departure cues, and we would talk about which ones are unavoidable and which ones are avoidable. Anything that's avoidable, we try and take out of the routine temporarily. Anything is unavoidable, we talk about it and we see, okay, well, maybe we just do it in a slightly different way. Maybe you do still do those departure cues the same way, but over time we need to work with those departure cues and put them into the training at some point. We don't normally work with departure cues in the method that I train till about 15 minutes duration, i.e. that we've managed to get the dog to be happy for about 15 minutes on its own. So we definitely don't start the training with you putting your coat on 100 times and taking your coat off 100 times and your shoes, you know, we don't, that's not the way this training works. We do it slightly differently, but we do have to have departure cues in our head and bear those things in mind because they are big triggers.
Yeah. So I suppose then on that note, one of my questions that would be, you know, is there anything before, so I'll just, what could we do before, like, you know, a good, say, half an hour, say, before going out that could potentially help settle the dog, provided that, you know, we've given our dogs enough exercise and so forth. So one of the things, and it's really just an experiment that I'm doing with my dog, is that I try and make sure that, you know, within half an hour of going out, I don't overexcite her in any way. Just, you know, not to hype her up. And then suddenly I go out the door and it's like, you know, you've taken her on a high and then she's kind of crashed all by herself. But it's just kind of things that I just think, you know, if I was in her paws, like, how would I feel about if I was in that situation? Is there anything, I mean, first of all, I guess it, you know, is that a good thing to do or is it not? And is there anything else we can be thinking of ahead of those departure cues that we could do to help them feel a bit more relaxed yep. when we do start going and, you know, those departure cues will start to be
yep. So I think this goes back to, again, is your dog suffering from separation anxiety or is it more frustration, boredom? Mm. I think if it is separation anxiety, there's nothing really that you can do ahead of time. You just do need to go through this process of this gradual exposure therapy. Yeah. Because what we've got to teach your dog is very slowly is actually being alone is okay. It's all right. You don't need to panic. And as I say, that's what that gradual exposure therapy is. If you're not sure and you want to sort of try and rule out the frustration, boredom, then there is something that we call SAFE. So it's the acronym of SAFE. And the S stands for sleepy. So that's making sure that they are in a mood where they're ready to to have a sleep and they're not charging around like lunatics, you know, full of adrenaline. And then we have the A, which is all played out, which I suppose goes to the nod towards getting them sleepy, you know, making sure they've been for a walk, making sure they've done some training or making sure they've had some enrichment so that they are quite tired. Then we've got F, which is full tummy. So making sure they're full so that you're not getting a need of wanting to eat or be hungry while you're out, which again can cause them to become quite stressed. And then E is empty bladder. So just making sure that they've been to the toilet. So, you know, basic needs of having had their food, been to the toilet, ready to sleep, nice and chilled out, nice and tired. That's the routine that we would suggest you go through to get them in the optimum position to relax and be okay while you're out. But if it is true separation anxiety, they will still exhibit those signs because it is the body is naturally becoming fearful and stressed and anxious. And so therefore, you know, it's not within their control what is going on for them.
Yeah.
That SAFE acronym is something that certainly for adult dogs, 100% use it. But it's something that I always say to my puppy clients as well, is to think about using that SAFE acronym, because as well as treating dogs that have separation anxiety, I'm also a massive advocate for prevention. And that's when it has to come in at puppy level. You know, I think we spend a lot of time as puppy owners, quite rightly, focusing on, you know, a positive socialization, going to puppy class and teaching our sits and our lay downs and all of that kind of stuff. But up there, right up there with that, should be teaching them about separation and teaching them that separation is okay. And I don't see that happening very often. So that's something that I've certainly offered as a service now, is to do some work with puppies and just do, again, gradual exposure to separation to help them cope with it.
I think that's so important. And puppy programs I've seen, I don't think I've ever seen a puppy program that incorporates that, actually. And now thinking of it, my mom has a cockapoo. She's had her since she was a puppy, and she has severe separation anxiety. It's the type of, she cannot be left alone, not even for half a minute at all. I mean, I thought my dog Rose, it is mild, but yeah, my mom's dog, it's really severe and it's heart-wrenching to see. So, and I think with cases like that, working with someone like you with a proper program and getting professional guidance is really important. I don't think you can really afford to experiment, because it's just too stressful for, I'd imagine it would just be really, really stressful for the dog. But on that note of puppies, because one of the things that we talked about, you know, in a previous conversation was, you know, people leave their dogs in a crate. Maybe if we start off by kind of talking about the experience of the dog, kind of the emotional experience of the dog being left alone in a crate, how that would make them feel and hence how that would impact their behavior.
Yeah. So it's really interesting that the whole crate conversation with separation anxiety. I'm a big fan of crates from a perspective of, I think I always, when I have a new client with a puppy, let's take the separation out of it for a second. But, you know, when I have a client that has a new puppy, my advice is always to do some really positive crate training. And that's the key. You've got to positively train them to absolutely adore that crate. You know, that's got to be the place where all the good stuff happens. And therefore, you have given them a safe haven where they're happy to spend their time and sleep, because you have trained it in such a positive way. So there's no negative emotions towards that crate. And that can work brilliantly for napping during the day, sleeping at night, making sure the puppy's getting enough sleep. That's all. And often, you know, I see puppies going into their adolescence and their adulthood and they're still using crates. And that's absolutely fine. My dog's an adult. She still sleeps in her crate when I'm out and at nighttime. No problems at all. Dogs that have separation anxiety, what can sometimes happen is the crate causes feelings of confinement, I suppose claustrophobia for want of a better phrase. And so what we see very often with separation anxiety is that dogs in crates are much worse, because they are just, they're panicking anyway, but they're also panicked by the confinement of the crate.
Mm.
If they were to be in that crate in a completely different scenario at nighttime, or when the owner is there during the day, they might be absolutely fine in that crate.
Mm.
But when it's specifically related to separation anxiety, we often do see that it can be much heightened. And actually, if you then work with your dog doing alone time outside of the crate, they can start to make progress much quicker because they've got that freedom to move around and not feel that confinement.
Yeah.
And what I get often, and I totally get it, it's so difficult having a dog with separation anxiety. And it's really important that, you know, what we never do as trainers is, you know, we're never going to sit there and blame the owner. And it's nothing to do with anything that you've done wrong. Often a dog genetically will come to be more susceptible to having anxieties and separation anxiety. Mm. And there might be stuff that happens in their early few weeks when they're with the breeder. There might be, you know, things that happen, house moves, changes to routine, all of that kind of stuff. Any of these sorts of things can trigger separation anxiety, so it should never be something that you blame yourself mm-hmm. for at all.
I mentioned a post I saw on a Facebook group and maybe I'll just give our listeners some context. A lady who has a dog, she lives in a studio, she has to work, and she would come back from work and she'd find her dog had tried to chew through the bars of the crate and has actually injured his face. And it was just so distressing for him. And people saying, well, why don't you just, you know, why does he need to be in the crate when it is clearly not good for him? And she said, well, he's chewed my sheets apart and, you know, tore my pillows apart. He's just destructing what little space I had. And I have a studio, so I can't really, you know, baby gate up or anything like that. And then people were thinking, well, okay, maybe you could just put like a what do you call them, the gates around your bed. So, you know, at least he's not confined in the crate. And a lot of the comments, and this is what I was saying to you, I think when we spoke previously, is that it was kind of like, that's really cruel and really judging the person. When I took a step back, instinctually, that was the first thing I thought. Like, how could you let your dog, you know, be in that position? And I thought, well, hold on. Maybe she can't afford someone to come and walk her dog. Maybe she can't afford a daycare or a dog sitter. You know, she obviously loves her dog because she was reaching out for help, knowing that people will probably criticize her on social media. So I think there is this aspect generally, and I've spoken to other guests on the podcast about this, is that, and I know we're going off a bit of a tangent here, but I think it's an important conversation to have, is being less judgmental and thinking, you know, more around how do we help people solve these problems in a constructive way within the resources that they have. You know, one of the things that you suggest was like, well, maybe she could reach out to friends and family, or even there's lots of people who don't have dogs that would love a dog. And if you said, come dog sit my dog for a few hours, would be more than happy to do that. And sometimes it's just like, just thinking outside the box and just helping, you know, our fellow dog carers and parents rather than judging them. So I think that's probably where the comment and why this topic of crate if it has separation anxiety.
So I mean that particular story is heartbreaking, is it? It really is heartbreaking. I mean, clearly that dog, you know, cannot cope with being alone. And the reason, you know, yes, I totally understand if she let him out the crate, he would destroy the house. But unfortunately, that situation is not going to improve unless she gets help and unless she stops leaving that dog on its own whilst she goes through a modification plan. And yes, to your, you know, there is that expense of a walker or taking it to daycare or having a sitter. But equally, yes, you know, I've often encouraged people to reach out to people via local Facebook groups and explain the situation. And so many people are willing to come and just sit with your dog for a few hours while you need to go off and do something. Yes, obviously you need to go through a vetting process to make sure you're happy, but I'm sure you would get inundated with people that are willing to help. And at least then you're getting out of that cycle. And once we start our training, because we're training with the dog under its threshold, we're never going to get to the point where the dog is chewing and being destructive, because we're building it up so slowly that we get out of that mindset. We get the dog out of that routine. We get them doing something else, which is just learning to be okay. But it's really difficult. But that situation that you mentioned there, unfortunately, unless she is going to put that dog into you know, during the day where it has some company, unless it's hyper attachment, which we've already talked about is a slightly different thing, then nothing's going to improve. And it's not a great life, I'm sure, for her, let alone the dog. You know, it's not a great place. But you know, there is a way out of it. And I think people, once they start the steps and they start taking the steps and doing the training, they really do see actually how effective it can be.
Yeah, and I think it is really, really difficult because it's certainly not a quick fix. And I think, and I think especially with like we talked about, is in extreme cases like that, you really do have, you do need to work with a professional if you feel that you're just not capable of addressing it yourself. And I guess just looping back to, you know, one of the points you made around prevention, and we've talked about this offline, right? Is you know, I was asking you the question, you know, do you think potentially that I've caused my dog to develop separation anxiety because I smother her all the time with lots of love and, you know, and I give her so much attention. I have now I'm doing this experiment where I let her come to me if she wants affection most of the time, not all of the time. I can't help myself. But, you know, it's a question that I think, have I caused this because I've just constantly been going up to her and, you know, giving her treats, giving her love, spending lots of time with her. Could that be a cause of it?
No. You know, we dogs are social animals. They like to be in social settings. They like to have love and cuddles and all of that kind of stuff. And that's absolutely fine. We should not be restricting that from our dogs. Mm. You know, like I said earlier, more commonly things like separation anxiety comes from the genetics. It comes from early experiences. It comes from a change of routine. It's not going to suddenly come on because you're giving your dog too much love. And actually, if you then pull back on that and you start to ignore your dog, or you know, you're pulling back for them, actually that can cause them quite a lot of stress and anxiety as well, because that's what they want from you. You know, I'm a big believer in what you do, which is let the dog come to you for a fuss. I'm not a big one for continually going over to your dog and trying to pick them up and cuddle them and handle them too much, because some dogs don't like that. Some dogs do not like being handled very much. But certainly if your dog is coming to you for love and affection, do it, give it. It's not gonna cause any problems at all. And that goes back to what I was saying earlier about, don't, you know, if your dog has separation anxiety in any way, don't beat yourself up about it. Don't think you've done anything to cause it. Just think, you know what, I want to resolve it. I want to do my best I can to try and help my dog so that we can both have a better life when we want to go out and do stuff. And, you know, and then speak to a trainer that can give you that support, because the support's really important. Again, back to your point about it being a long process. It is a long process. You know, gradual exposure therapy, whether it's humans, whether it's dogs, whether it's, you know, whoever, gradual exposure therapy is a long process, and you do need support through that, because you're not going to see instant results. And human nature is, particularly these days, is we want things straight away. If we don't get things straight away, we lose interest, we try something else, we yo-yo back from one thing to the other thing to the other thing to the other thing. We never stick at things. And you know, if you can stick at this therapy, you will see progress, but it will be over a number of months, probably 6 to 12 months, if I'm being honest, for a dog that has severe separation anxiety. But if you're prepared to stick at it, put the effort in, it will definitely. So yeah, that's a really important point for people to know, because most dog training that you do, you see quite quick results. You know, if you're teaching a sit or a lay down or a trick or something, normally you get that instant gratification and you feel happy that you've done something. And actually with separation anxiety, what we're actually asking is for your dog to completely ignore you. If your dog is completely ignoring you while you're doing your training, you know it's working.
Yeah. It's kind of counter to every you know, many other aspects of training. And I think that's really helpful, just sharing the you know, how long it takes so people can manage their expectations. And I suppose, again, my advice to anyone would be just put yourself in their paws, which I repeat on every podcast episode, because I think it's so important. And think, if you have phobia or severe fear of something, you're not going to get over that in a day or two or a couple of sessions with a therapist. It takes quite a bit of time, depending on the severity. So no, I think that makes perfect sense. And I think one of the questions I do have for you, just reflecting on my own experience, the fact that this podcast is aimed at people who are adopting rescue dogs, is, you know, I shared the example with my dog Rosa, and how the first probably 2 months, I couldn't really see signs of separation anxiety, but it did develop my hypothesis is that she's developed the separation anxiety or the attachment because she has settled in. So I guess, you know, is it something that people who are adopting dogs, adult dogs, need to just be aware of? Because it's really difficult, because you kind of like, oh, she's following me around, so she's comfortable, she wants to be with me, which means she's kind of recognizing I'm her human now. Yep. And you get quite excited about that, not realizing, oh crap, she's just, you know, she's getting hyper attached to me. And you don't see the output until it, or the end result, yep, until it actually happens, and you're like, oh holy cow, what have I done now?
Yeah, absolutely. It's, I don't know whether I've got the answer to that, if I'm honest, because I've worked with people who have had rescue dogs, and the rescue centre has told them this dog has a history of separation anxiety. It's been returned to the home once, twice, maybe more times than that, because the owners have not been able to cope because of the separation anxiety. So with some dogs, they come with a history, and I suppose in some ways that's more helpful because the owners can get help straight away. But I think, you know, with any rescue, there's always an element of letting them have some time to just come to their new home and decompress, and then they'll start to come out with their own personalities and their own ways, and some of those will be positive and some will be things that you weren't anticipating. Either way, you know, if it's something you weren't anticipating, my advice is always to get help for it. But I just think with every dog, it's such an individual thing. And you know, I think on the, you know, say for example, someone like you, you know, your dog's starting to follow you around, then there is an exercise that we do called Magic Mat. So Magic Mat is where we teach the dog to have a place mat where we just start to really heavily positively reinforce them being on that mat. So every time on that, when they're on that mat, they get loads of good stuff. And then slowly we start to have them on that mat, and then we'll start to move away from them. We start eventually going over thresholds and out of rooms and up and down the stairs. But what we're teaching the dog very slowly is that staying on that mat is positive, and it's a good thing, and it's okay to be on that mat while we go upstairs and come back down again, or we go in and out of different rooms. Yeah. It's not really an exercise we use for departures. So it's not one that, you know, if you're actually going to go out of the front door and leave them, we don't really say make them go, you know, have them on their mat. But it's a nice exercise to just be able to at least move around the house and have your dog happy. Again, it's one we use with puppies a lot to, again, just teach them that if you just stay on your mat, it's okay, I'm going upstairs, I'm coming back again. And they're really simple things like peekaboo and hide and seek and, you know, just disappearing out of view quickly and coming back and making it fun, making it a game. They're all good ways of slowly just teaching your dog that they don't have to be attached to you. You know, they can have a little bit of independence, and that little bit of independence is okay.
So
even things like that, if you're starting to become a little bit worried, there's certain games that you can play and things that just help the dog a little bit.
That makes perfect sense.
The other thing that I always say to people is, if you're not sure whether your dog has separation anxiety, is please, please, please invest in a camera or some sort of app where you can actually watch what is going on while you're not there. Because making assumptions or guessing or ignoring doesn't help. You know, facts, we need the facts really to know, okay, well, yes, your dog is getting panicked and upset while you're not there. And then we can at least start to work with that and understand, you know, what's going on. A lot of times people are just assuming either that their dog's okay or that they're not okay, but they don't really know. So until you really know, you can't make a decision.
That's a really, really good point. Thanks for bringing that up, because I have had a camera now for about a month and a bit, and what I've noticed through watching her when I go out is she doesn't cry as soon as I go out. It's actually a few. So, because what I would do is I would go out and stand at the front door, just listen and be like, please don't cry, please don't cry. And then she wouldn't cry. And I'd be like, oh, okay. And then I'd go downstairs. And then as soon as I put the app on, a few minutes into it, and then I could hear her start pacing and crying. And
I'm
like, okay, go back home. So definitely would suggest to anyone to get a camera in. You can get them on Amazon. I got mine for like £25. They're really reasonably priced at the moment, and they give you quite a 360 degree view, and you've got motion sensors and stuff. So if your dog is sleeping and wakes up, you know, I just find it gives me massive peace of mind just knowing.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Really helpful.
Yeah, and just seeing, so like the other day I was out and opened, you just checked. I have, because I have separation anxiety, I have to be really careful that I'm not getting really obsessive about it, because I was in the beginning, like checking it every 5 minutes.
Yeah.
But, and I put a rule for myself that I'm allowed to check once an hour. But when I do open the app and I can see she's curled up and sleeping in her bed, I just get so happy and excited that she's comfortable, okay. So I would say definitely, definitely invest in a camera. That is a game changer in terms of knowing what's going on. Yeah.
Because what you've been able to do by the sounds of it, which is what we would do again if we were working with a client, is work out what's the baseline, i.e. what can the dog cope with at the moment? And then we have our starting point, and that's the starting point of where we set our training plans. Or if the owner can't even get out of the door without signs of anxiety, we'd start with an exercise called Door is a Bore. But understanding where that dog is at is really important, because then that will give you your training plans and how you move forward. The other thing that is worth mentioning as well, which is a bit of a big myth when it comes to separation anxiety, is that we would not recommend leaving them with food. We don't use food at all as part of this training plan, because what we found is, and a lot, you know, when we say what we found, this is through, you know, a huge amount of cases research, is that actually the food serves as a distraction, but as soon as that food is gone, the dog then panics and goes into panic mode and starts to become anxious. So the we don't say leave a Kong out, or, you know, leave it, because what tends to happen is the dog will be so panicked it won't even be interested in the food, or it will eat the Kong, but then, or whatever it is, and then go, oh god, there's no one here, I'm gonna panic, and then it starts. So yeah, we don't recommend that. We don't use food as part of the training that we would do.
Okay, and that actually makes a lot of sense. What I had been doing, and I don't do it anymore, is I would put a licky mat down with some peanut butter, which she loves, and I would actually put it out of sight from the door, and then realize that when I was going out and checking the camera, once she'd finished it, she'd come and cry, and I'm like, okay, this is not working. What I do is I kind of leave her a yak. She has it in her bed. And what we tend to do when we go out is not make a big fuss, but we do say, bye, Rosa. And we go so we know she knows we're gone. Because I think that the approach before of let's just pretend we're not going, and then she'll realize when I fail. You know what? Sometimes, kind of like when I just sit and say these things out loud and I reflect, I'm like, well, what was I thinking?
You're not alone. It's totally normal.
Yeah, I just say things out loud that other people are probably just thinking. But I've had plenty of those moments when, you know, and I think with adopting a rescue dog is you go through those phases in the beginning, and there are so many things, you know, unrelated to separation anxiety. You know, for example, she didn't bark until 6 weeks into me having her, and I thought there was something wrong with her vocal cords. I'm like, should I take her to the vet to get them checked? And then one day in the park we were playing and she barked at me, and I would, she wanted to play, it was a play bark, and I got so excited that she barked. It was just things like that, that, you know. And then I said it to someone I posted it on a Facebook, and was anyone else thinking this? And lots of me like, yeah, we actually went to get our dog checked. So there's
really
things like that where people are thinking it, but no one's really saying it out loud. But
yeah, no, totally.
Part of the journey.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, you know what? Facebook groups, I love them and I hate them. I think they could be, you know, they could be great for giving support when you're in the same place as other people and you can see that other people are going through the same thing. But I do think they have to be monitored, ideally monitored by people that know their stuff, because unfortunately I see all too often, you know, people saying, oh my, just going on Facebook and asking for advice about separation anxiety, and you know, again, people just that are just pet owners will come back with all of this advice, and it's all well-meaning, you know, it's well-meaning, but you just see myth after myth after myth keep coming out, and you just think, no, it's not going to work. But you know, that's life, isn't it? And I think, you know, certainly, you know, from that, you know, I did my training with a lady called Julie Naismith, who has written a few books on separation anxiety. She has a few subscription based groups that you can join and things like that. If you don't want to go along the route of a trainer and you feel like you can do it yourself, then I would certainly recommend looking her up, because at least those Facebook groups are monitored and the advice coming back is from one of her professional trainers that can, you know, can give you the right stuff.
That's a really, really good point. I think social media can be super helpful at times, especially in terms of getting, especially some of that emotional support when you're kind of stuck. I completely agree with you. There's just lots of people dishing out advice that they shouldn't be dishing out. And I think that the point about make sure you're in groups where there is good moderation is quite important, because I think the other aspect is there can be a lot of kind of like judgment and hate comments that aren't necessarily coming from a bad place, although like just at, you know, first glance sometimes it seems like it, like they are, but you know, it's, people get quite passionate when we talk about animals in general. I see it a lot, and I'm part of a few groups where the moderators are really good at, you know, stepping in when someone might be saying something like not really accurate, or maybe, you know, leave that to a professional, or when someone's just using a tone that's just not really helpful in terms of helping someone solve their problem.
But yeah, you know, it's just a very emotive subject, isn't it, when anyone asks anything about, you know, dogs, cat, whatever, it can be quite emotive. So yeah, I always just say just check with somebody that's done their training, that knows their stuff, that is into positive reinforcement based methods, you know, because I wouldn't get advice on dentistry from someone other than a dentist that has done their training. You know, I wouldn't be taking advice off someone on Facebook for my teeth. Rubbish example, but, you know, something that I think is sometimes lacking when people are asking about dog training and behavior particularly.
Yeah. And I also think, you know, that for anyone who's thinking, because sometimes I think this, like, quite expensive program, or, you know, it is money that you're going to spend, whereas actually if you think about the cost of not addressing the problem, not just, you know, financially, because it will turn around later and bite you in the backside, it's not going to go away, you know, you work at that, and the cost in terms of your own emotional state and your dog's emotional state, you know, that's quite significant. So I think it's kind of looking at it beyond just the pound sign or the dollar sign on
the program.
And
I think, you know, a lot of, you're absolutely right, you know, there is a financial investment, and I think the way I try and help people look at it is, well, if you're paying ongoing for daycare, sitters, walkers, all that kind of stuff, then in the long term you may save on that, because you're not having to do that anymore. And also, you know, I know certainly I do, and I'm sure lots of other trainers do as well, with some of their programs, they offer sort of installment programs. So, you know, I offer my clients the ability to pay in installments if they can't manage to do it all up front. And that's totally fine. I totally get that. And I'll try as much as I can to help people in that way, because I want them to be able to get the help that they need. And I don't want that to be a barrier. I think, but you're right, you know, you can live with this kind of stuff, and I see many people that do, but it's so much better. There's so much better life waiting for you if you can just be prepared to go through it, because people can get their lives back. They can go out and have dinner or gym or whatever it is, the thing that they want to do, and they know that their dog is okay, and therefore the dog is also not going through all of that stress, which is not good for them health wise. It's not good for a dog to be in stress all of the time. Get help is what I would say. At least reach out and have a chat with somebody.
But on that note, where can listeners find out more about you, and how can they reach out if they want to have a chat with you?
So if they want to have a chat with me, it would be, so my website's www.fairytalesdogtraining.co.uk, and that's fairy tales as in the dog tale, not T-A-L-E-S. All of my work with separation anxiety is done virtually, so I can help clients nationally, even internationally. But also Julie's website, which is subthreshold training.com, or just Google Julie Naismith, and she has a network on her website of all of us guys that have gone through her program and that are very well trained in dealing with separation anxiety. So she has, again, international selection of people to choose from wherever you may be based. But again, a lot of us do work virtually, so you don't necessarily have to go for somebody that's in your local area with this kind of stuff. And obviously the reason why we do it virtually is by nature of the training that we're going to be doing. I don't need to be there. If I am there sitting there watching the dog while you walk out of the room, it's not a real life scenario. And I certainly don't need to be traipsing in and out of the door with you. You know, where I add my benefit is watching and really observing the dog and just making sure that there's no subtle signs of anxiety going on whilst you are doing your duration and your training. And so I can do that much more effectively in this type of scenario on Zoom or that kind of thing. So yeah, so by all means get in touch, and you know, if I can't help you for whatever reason, I can always point you in the direction of someone else. And I have an Instagram page, Fairy Tales Marlowe, and a Facebook page as well, so Fairy Tales Doctrine.
I will link to all of those in the show notes of this episode. And Helen, thank you so much for taking the time. It's been a real pleasure chatting with you.
No worries, I've enjoyed it. It's good. It's nice to talk about it. I think it's a topic that's really important to keep talking about. So thank you for having me.
Thank you, Helen.
No worries.